Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Adam Ragusea in today from Meghna Chakrabarty.
And it's debt ceiling madness in Washington, D.C., where both chambers of Congress are preparing to vote on a deal that would raise the country's borrowing limit in exchange for deep cuts in spending.
And the deal announced by President Obama last night was described by the president as not one that he preferred. He characterized the process as messy and far too long.
But preferred or not, the deal still has to pass through the Senate and the House. And today, party leaders worked hard to build support around a deal popular with few.
WBUR's Monica Brady Myrov has been covering the negotiations and particularly the role of the Massachusetts delegation there. And she joins us now from Washington. Monica, where are we at in this process now?
Well, the parties are just finishing up their meetings to learn more about the framework of this deal. Basically, they're all reading it and rereading it. They need to vote today to help the country avoid a default. But this deal isn't making a lot of Democrats happy, from what I heard from some Democrats leaving the meeting, because it has no new revenue, no new taxes on wealthy people. It makes changes to Pell Grants and student loan programs, and according to some Democrats, it doesn't protect Medicare enough.
You've been following the Massachusetts delegation's role in this process. How are they responding to the terms of this deal as they understand them at this point?
Well, I spoke to Michael Capuano, who said he just doesn't know yet. He hasn't heard enough. He's still reading it. He says the one thing he does like about it is that it avoids default, but he's still undecided. Congressman Barney Frank also said he's not sure. He just shrugged and showed me the folder filled with the bill and how big it is and how he's got to read through this and make a decision soon. And then Congressman Stephen Lynch said he's leaning towards yes, but only because he wants to avoid default. He says he thinks the bill has potential, but he doesn't like that it includes no revenue.
Well, as you said, Monica, there's a lot here that's going to be unpopular with Democrats. What is the Massachusetts sole Republican, Scott Brown, saying about the deal?
The one thing he said all along is that he will vote for a bill that has spending cuts and no new taxes, no matter where it comes from. So by that yardstick, it seems as if he would support this bill. But we'll see that on the Senate floor when the votes take place.
Do you have any sense that the deal is going to pass?
Well, I know that Congress has to resolve it today one way or another. My sense is that the Senate is behind this. Both leaders have spoken out in support of it, and the House is the wild card. I just said, a lot of Dems don't like this. One from New York said he doesn't think the House Democrats would support it, but the Vice President, Joe Biden, came out after the caucus meeting and said he thinks that it will pass the House. So it's still very much up in the air, but we have to get this done today because there's too much at stake.
Well, Monica, Washington has just been full tilt over this whole debt ceiling fight, and now that this potential deal has been brokered, is there a feeling in the city that the tone is changing?
Well, there has been a lot of name-calling on the Senate floor and the House floor, and it's been very rancorous. And definitely I've heard from Democrats in the Massachusetts delegation that the tone has changed with this new Republican-led Congress, especially with members of the Tea Party who, one congressman told me, are in their own ideological corner and refuse to come out and work on anything that's bipartisan.
So, Monica, what happens next?
Well, we're waiting to see when the House and Senate will vote on this bill, this debt ceiling bill, and that is going to just determine whether or not this country goes into default or not.
WBUR's Monica Brady Myrov reporting live from Washington. Thanks, Monica, and safe travels back up to Boston, assuming that events permit your return.
Thank you, Adam.
And for more on how New England's politicians are reacting to the deal, we head north to New Hampshire and to Republican Representative Frank Ginta. Ginta is a freshman congressman who rode into office last year thanks in part to support from Tea Party conservatives in his district. He was a co-sponsor of the so-called cut, cap, and balance approach, which would have tied a debt ceiling increase to spending cuts, a spending cap, and a balanced budget amendment. The plan passed the House last week but was quickly shot down by the Senate. When we spoke to him earlier today, Ginta said he was still undecided on whether to support the current compromise.
As what I've read so far of the bill, it does adhere, I believe, to the basic principles of cut, cap, and balance. I'd prefer that we have greater spending cuts. I'd prefer that we have a balanced budget amendment requirement. But we're moving toward that direction, and we're changing the debate in Washington, and that's a very critical thing for me in order to achieve what our objective is, which is eventually balanced budgets and reducing our debt.
Can your leader, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, get the most conservative fringes of your party, those who are elected with a lot of support from the Tea Party, can he bring those people along on this vote?
Well, I think he can probably bring some, but certainly not all. Everyone has to feel first a responsibility to their district and how they vote, and different districts have different levels of conservative groups and liberal groups. So, you know, that does drive, I hope, every member of Congress. But secondly, the considerations for the nation and how important this is to move in the right direction. So I think you'll see, ultimately, this bill pass with bipartisan support, but there will be some within the Republican Party who don't support it, as well as in the Progressive Party and in the Democratic caucus.
Well, let me ask you about that sort of progressive view. The president and many Democrats wanted this agreement to balance spending cuts with raising revenue. Your party steadfastly refused to give any ground on new taxes. Why?
Well, because when you have an unemployment rate of 9.2%, you've got 18,000 jobs that were created in July, which is a terrible number when you're considering you need about 200,000 to 250,000 to start seeing that unemployment rate come down. We don't think it makes sense to raise tax rates. Now, we have, and the speaker said on a speech on the floor of the House, put, quote, revenues on the table. And what that means is getting rid of tax loopholes in a larger package of tax reform. I know that that was discussed with Speaker Boehner and the president, and you will see a package come out of the House probably later this year on a tax reform bill. Now, that would likely lower rates. It would broaden the base, but it would also get rid of unfair loopholes. That's something I think most Americans want to see, and that's something I'm in favor of as well.
So you would favor closing some of the loopholes and special deductions that some of the wealthiest of Americans enjoy. I guess my question is, why not put that on the table now? I mean, this is a package that's being considered that's going to cut significantly. What we have, for example, hedge fund and equity managers who enjoy enormous advantages within the tax structure. Why not put those on the table right now and make this appear more balanced, fairer to the progressive side of this equation?
Well, I think Speaker Boehner tried to do that, and it's like the president and the speaker just couldn't come to final terms. But let's also remember the reason we're focusing on the spending side is in 2.5 years, spending has increased 28%. If you include the stimulus, that's 84%. So there is a sense of frustration that these policies have not improved the economic conditions of the country. So let's try an alternative approach to getting us back to consumer confidence levels that are higher, better value of the dollar, and greater opportunity for job creators.
Do you have any concern at all, and again, this is a concern that comes from progressive economists, that cutting so deeply in the midst of what is still feels like a recession, if it isn't in fact a recession, is just going to really set us in the wrong direction, that this is just going to really take the wind out of the sails of whatever recovery we're in the midst of?
Well, the reason I don't subscribe to that economic theory is that it also argues that you have to spend your way out of challenging economic times, and we have tried that now for 2.5 years, and I think most would say it hasn't been successful. But you have the rating agencies on the other side who say if you continue that policy, you're going to get downgraded as a nation. So you've got to have systemic change, and you have to have real spending cuts.
Well, Congressman Ginta, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your help.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
That's Frank Ginta. He's a Republican congressman from New Hampshire.